Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So there was a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday on the implications of the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision overturning Roe. And among those testifying was one UC Berkeley law professor, Kiara Bridges. And this exchange happened between Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, and the good professor. Not exactly paper trace quality, Professor Bridges here, but
it's unbelievable.
Here is that exchange on the, again, the topic is Dobbs. The topic of this conversation is whether women can get pregnant. Whether men pretending to be women can get pregnant.
Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women?
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy.
Many
cis
do.
Women do not have the capacity for pregnancy.
Yeah, right.
There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue. We can recognize
that this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing them.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancies?
So I want to note that 1 out of 5 transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important
because of my line of questioning.
Because
we can't talk about it.
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know that they exist.
I'm denying that trans people exist by asking
you
if you're talking about women having pregnancies.
Do you believe that men can get pregnant?
No, I don't think women can get
pregnant. So you are denying that trans people exist?
And that leads to violence? Is this how you run your classroom? Are students allowed to question you?
Absolutely.
Or are they also treated like this?
Where no,
they're told that they're opening up people to violence.
We have a good time in my class. You should join.
Oh, I bet.
You might learn a lot.
Wow, I would learn a lot. I've learned a lot just in this exchange.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. That's a law professor at UC Berkeley you heard from.
That
right?
Should
Kiara Bridges.
Send chills down your spine.
It should remind you, if you have forgotten, what the college campus, what the professional schools are, and maybe give you some understanding of what they're producing, thus what you see in these top-of-the-line law firms and in corporate America and so forth, UC Berkeley Law School.
But I just love, she points out that 1 out of 5 transgenders commit suicide. Why? Maybe because they're suffering from mental illness and not because people are questioning, not because people are, is it hard to be a transgender? I don't know. But that's not the senator's fault that 1 out of 5 commit suicide.
See, so what she does there, the good professor, is consistent with what you get from the left generally. So, pick up on how they operate because they do so in concert with one another. So words are violence. Violence is reparations. And we're all in the business. What do we say during COVID? Everything is about public safety.
Yeah.
Everything is about safety. We're trying to keep people safe. Everything you can do,
it
anything.
Saves one life.
You can put people in internment camps if you convince enough people that it's for their own good, that it's to keep people safe, to keep people safe, to keep people safe. This rap that you heard from Kiara Bridges, the good professor, it's important to understand what they're doing. Domestic terrorists, insurrectionists, transphobes, racists, misogynists, all making people unsafe, all committing acts of violence with their words before you even get to an assessment of their deeds. And if you're committing violence, well, what's the response? What's the appropriate response from the state? Violence? Well, the state has to sanction you legally, perhaps imprison you. I mean, understand that as ridiculous as it is to have a UC Berkeley law professor arguing with a United States senator in a public forum about whether men can give birth. Understanding how ridiculous that is, but it's ridiculous to a point. Crazy like authoritarian foxes are these leftists. Your school board, your parent at a school board meeting, so no domestic terrorist. Your person questioning the results of the 2020 election is an insurrectionist, also a domestic terrorist.
And a racist.
They committed treason. Yeah. You're a racist for doing X. You're making people of color unsafe. You're a transphobe for saying Y. You're making people unsafe. Don't just do what most people will do, most, you know, sane people will do in hearing this exchange and say, oh my gosh, this is so ridiculous, and then pay no mind to it. That's ridiculous. No, I'm not there. That's ridiculous. I mean, I obviously want people to be able to live their own lives in peace with their fellow man and all that, but that's just ridiculous, and then stop. Don't stop. Look at all of these instances, and this is not conspiracy theory. It's just look at all these instances and see if you see a pattern. The big lie, domestic terrorist rap on parents at school board meetings, challenging CRT, racist, people of color unsafe, transphobe, LGBTQIA unsafe, the whole country unsafe if you challenge the results of an election. There's a point to the madness, is what I'm saying.
Well, she just unloaded on him, too, and accused him of being transphobic. And, I mean, I watched it over and over again. I played it for Peyton and Eli. Like, what are you thinking? Like, oh, my gosh. Well, Peyton said, I do realize what she's saying. I don't agree with her. But she's saying that cisgender men who are now women can give birth. But biologically, they are not women, and everybody knows that.
But understand.
It doesn't suck.
I understand. This is not about biology.
This is about
political power. This is about political power. That's it. And if you, again, stray from the orthodoxy, particularly if you're otherwise seen as an ally, oh, they'll come for you too. I give you Macy Gray. Macy Gray is this one-hit wonder, if you've never heard of her. I Try, you know. I don't know. I don't know how she's actually managed to stay somewhat relevant, like, you know, as a C-list celebrity. She's in one song, as far as I know. But, you know, I don't follow her career. Anyway, she was on with Piers Morgan for some reason. And she made some comments about trans women. In other words, men pretending to be women. Saying you can't just pretend to be a woman and that makes you a woman. That were not a direct quote, but that's right. Essentially what she was saying.
Okay.
Well,
what's wrong with that? Uh-oh.
You can imagine.
She stepped in it.
You can imagine the response from Kiara Bridges and her fellow travelers. That's violence. That's violence. So Macy Gray went on to Today Show.
Oh, no.
To work with Hoda. To walk it all back in.
You were on the Piers Morgan show, and there was a question about trans women. And this was what you said in part. as a woman, just because you go change your parts doesn't make you a woman. If you want me to call you a her, I will, because that's what you want. But that doesn't make you a woman. Just because I call you a her, just because you've got a surgery, you can call yourself whatever you want. There was a wave of backlash that right. came as a result. Right. Just tell me where you are right now on that statement.
Well, I never, of course, meant to hurt anybody with what I said. I'm actually a huge, I think it takes a lot of courage to be yourself, to go out in the world and be honest about who you are. And so I think anyone who is in the LGBT community is a hero and sets an example for all of us with that, you know? So I said some things that didn't go over well. But my intention was never to hurt anybody. I feel bad that I did hurt some people. And I think it's just about education. It's about conversation and us getting to a point where we understand each other. And that only happens with, you know, I've learned a lot through this. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of the reasons it might have happened. Just it was a huge learning experience for me, and I just have a compassion for you know what I think you can like I said in there, you can call yourself what like you whoever you believe you are, mm-hmm. and no one can dictate that for you or take that away from you. You know,
is that good enough? Can I come back in the house now?
Can I get in?
Will you let me back in? Is that? Do you need more? Because I'll give you more. To borrow from another great artist, Lizzo, uh-huh. Truth hurts. Yeah. Truth hurts. I'm sorry I hurt other people. I'm sorry that you're hurt by the truth, but the truth is the truth. But, I mean, you see her throwing up all over herself. Every person in the LGBTQIA community is a hero. This is again, the verbal gymnastics that you must do. You must celebrate. They're all heroes.
If you don't, you're transphobic, homophobic.
Speaking of another word that has lost all meaning, hero is basically hero. The other side of the coin of racist. It means nothing anymore. Mark and Rochelle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it just seems to me that deep down this is all started or is based on allowing them to control language. They can define what violence means. They can define what a woman is. They can define what certain groups, that certain words now are violent and can have physical ramifications. You get a law professor teaching students that now you can sue over words. And it's like if your feelings are hurt, it's like they're being taught that they can retaliate in physical ways against language. And I grew up Polish, and if I could go back and think about all the times my feelings are hurt when kids were telling jokes about Polish people, it's like it was rampant when I was a kid.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the call, Mark.
Yeah, well, they just make you feel bad for being straight.
The point is this, though. Yeah, right. Controlling the language. As Emerson observed, first the language is corrupted, then man is corrupted. What are the implications? They're doing this in concert to a point, for a purpose. Always think next step. Start from the premise, look at what they're doing, look at where they're going or they're attempting to go. Don't just look at this in isolation and say, oh my gosh, look at this is what we've come to. And throw up your hands. It's much more serious than that. It's much more serious than some daffy singer like Macy Gray or some daffy law professor like Kiara Bridges. It's very serious. The implications, not those people, but the implications.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Signature Bank.
Yeah, there it is. Macy Gray's one hit. But even somebody down the list on the celebrity hierarchy,
yeah,
you better not stray or we'll come for you, as they did. All right, switching gears, I want to talk about the shooting that happened over the weekend outside of Sean Rhino's bar in Beverly. And how, as we said on Monday, it was being misreported by the Chicago press. Now it's been corrected, of course, but it was misreported initially. So just remember that before you just accept whatever is on a WGN news site. The way it was being misreported, as compared to what I heard from people like in Beverly, was that, the unnamed people were in a fight and one went and got a gun and shot the other, as if they were, both parties were culpable that they were in a fight. And of course, how it actually happened was that Danny Golden, the off-duty police officer, was in this bar and he tried to break up a fight, did break up a fight that occurred, and then one of the people involved went back to his car, got a gun, came back, opened fire, and he was hit and paralyzed.
22 rounds were fired. They hunted him down. And at first, are you ready for this? Kim Fox strikes again. At first, they were just charged with aggravated battery with a firearm. And people were out of their minds. And I mean, every Chicago cop and every family member and friend of a Chicago cop was sick to their stomachs. And then within 2 hours, they updated it. So now all three suspects face felony charges of aggravated battery with a firearm. Hayes and Chris Manis also face attempted murder charges. Kim Fox wasn't even, these are cop killers or wannabe cop killers. And she didn't even charge them originally with attempted murder. I mean, there is something really wrong here, folks. And they were going to do it again. Here's Assistant State's Attorney James Murphy.
The defendants also joked about the incident afterwards, stating, quote, "Let's get drunk this weekend and start a bar fight."
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
So Golden, you may have saw the new news coverage, was wheeled out yesterday for a moment to sort of just connect with people that had gathered around the hospital to get to you know, for encouragement and to express their concern. And so that was a cool moment when he was able to come out and see all the people there and got applause. And he seemed to be in relatively good spirits. His father spoke to the press. He's police, too.
Yeah, three generations of Chicago cops.
Yeah, Patrick Golden had this to say in part.
"And after serving his country, he wanted to serve his city. Very proud. If I could say one thing, we have to stop this senseless gun violence towards everybody on this street, citizens, and Chicago police officers as well."
And Golden, he's got a bright future ahead of him.
"He's shot in the back by these cowards. He's paralyzed. He's getting married next year. And he won't be able to walk down the aisle."
That's Alderman O'Shea, who's friends with the family.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We were just having this conversation off air, but we'll put it out to the audience. Do you think this is something that captures people's attention in a way that they start to move closer to a course correction come next winter, come February, when you vote in a mayor's race, for example? You vote for alderman too. I think this may have some staying power.
Some teeth.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. It's getting a lot of attention, I mean, as well it should. But then I think about that, hopefully, about it staying, having staying power and staying present in people's minds and getting them to think about the choices they make for leadership of the city. And then I remember Ella French.
Yeah.
And has that stayed in your mind? Is that, do you think, something people are contemplating when they're thinking about leadership of the city? I don't know. The attention Danny Golden is getting, this incident, includes Tom Brady.
So sorry to hear about what you're going through, and just know, thinking about you, appreciate all your hard work and your commitment to service. And I know you'll get through it. It's going to make you tougher. It's going to make you stronger, and we're all pulling for you. Take care.
It's a nice thing that Tom Brady did.
Cool.
Golden.
And Ozzie Guillen too tweeted some, you know, his best wishes right after, like within the next day that it happened.
And there is a, by the way, I'll tweet it out here this morning. There is a GoFundMe page set up for Danny Golden. I mean, I looked at it yesterday afternoon, so I'm sure it's doubled by now, but it was at like $315,000. I think the goal is $1.5 million.
Yeah, it was at $588,000 last I checked.
He's going to, Golden is being transferred to the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab for physical therapy and rehab. So that's happening. So anyway, look for that tweet and please share it in terms of that GoFundMe page for Officer Golden.
But back to what you're saying, I mean, is this going to prompt people to go to the, you know, to vote in February? I mean, think about it. They shot him 22 times.
Not vote. Is this going to prompt people to hold the individuals in charge of the city accountable for what's happened on their watch? So the short version of that is vote them out. But accountability. Holding people who are in charge accountable for what happens on their watch. And I include the aldermen and up and down the ballot for that matter. Because, you know, all roads lead to Chicago. I include the governor all the way down the ballot to the city offices. And also sending a signal that this is the basis on which we're making decisions. And so the people, the new people, we're going to give a chance. No, going in, that we'll be back here in 2 years and 4 years to measure you exactly the same way.
And as for Kim Fox, she should be ashamed of herself.
Oh, I mean, please.
Well, come on. It's an off-duty cop being a good Samaritan, stopping a fight, 22 rounds fired at him, and they don't consider that attempted murder until every cop in Chicago pushes back and calls her office and demands more. They demanded more, and they got more, but it took hours to get it. And the fact that they didn't do it in the first place, how could that not be anything but attempted murder? Weapons violation. Give me a break.
Steve and Beverly.
Dan, you're absolutely right about the alderman. I live in the 19th ward, and I've been paying close attention ever since Lightfoot got into office. Our alderman in the 19th runs the aviation committee up in O'Hare, so he cannot afford to criticize Lightfoot. He's actually been on TV before saying we should not point fingers at the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in our local newspaper saying we are all to blame for failing the police, including our community. So until he faces up to what the problem actually is, where it's emanating from, it's just grandstanding. And you're right. We need to vote these people out. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Yeah, the Maddow shit. Yeah, it's a nice sentiment he offered yesterday, but have you heard the name Matt O'Shea very much in when it comes to holding Lightfoot, Brown accountable, criticizing Fox's handling of violent crime as the Cook County State's Attorney's Office? How about Tim Evans? How about Tom Dart? How about anybody? It's very easy to offer the crocodile tears when a horrific thing happens. So what were you in a position of authority, in a policy-making position, as a representative of these neighborhoods in which this happened? What have you been doing for the last 2 years, 4 years, as an office holder? Oh, he's one of us. Is he? Or is he one of you when it's convenient, and he's one of you when it's convenient for him? I mean, and he's one of them when it's convenient for him. You getting great representation down on the south side in Beverly, Mount Greenwood, are you?
No one's getting great representation.
Exactly. I mean,
listen to Superintendent Brown. He could care. Like, he doesn't. Does he even feel everything? It's like the gun's fault. The gun's fault.
That situation just speaks to the occurrence of gun violence in our country.
That situation, your officer
got shot. Guns should not be available to individuals who shouldn't have them.
Blah, blah, blah. Guns should not be over and over.
Guns should not be available to citizens who shouldn't have them. That's a profound statement. Yeah, right. We agree. We agree. People shouldn't shoot people. Yes, thank you, Superintendent.
What about like one of our own was shot?
We understand what shouldn't happen. And what shouldn't happen is happening all the time, everywhere.
Every day.
So what are you going to do about those things that shouldn't happen but are happening? And that's where, you know, Brown's talking points run out, don't they? It's just so tiresome. They are not on your side. How much more evidence do you need? They are not on your side. I don't even care who the your is, because it really is everybody. They just pick out constituencies and say, I'm with you. Maybe they'll throw some money at you. Maybe there's friends and there's relationships and I'm going to work for you. They pick out constituencies and hustle them. So when I say, they are not on your side, I mean your side. People on the outside. So that's black and white. That's Latino and Asian. That's rich and poor. That's the city worker and the local business owner. They, on the inside, the political ruling class, the men and women of always, those who share a brain and an ideology, they are not on your side. So you better think about getting on your own side. Tom in Oswego.
Good morning, Danny and Amy. First of all, I would hope that the Republicans, sure, would stop calling it gun violence. I own guns, weapons. There's no such thing as gun violence. It's people violence. I wish they'd stop that. Second, just echo your point, Dan. These people do not care. Look at the DA in New York, what's going on there, in Chicago, that professor. They're ideologues. They only have one idea, and if you don't agree with them, you're the enemy. And I wish Republicans would understand that. We are fighting an enemy that does not like us. They hate us, and they want us gone, period.
I wish.
It's just, I feel like my idea, I swear, watching these interviews, I feel like I'm getting smarter as I'm getting older. Because of the IQ with people around me, it's really sad.
People are stupid.
It's just sad. And Amy, to your point, again, you said, does she feel no shame? No, they don't.
Exactly.
They don't care.
That's a rhetorical question.
Care. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. I wish some Democrats would get hip to this reality. I mean, to our friend Steve from Beverly, Matt O'Shea, hey, let's not point fingers.
Yeah, I know.
Not yesterday, but generally rallying to the fence of Lightfoot before. Right. Because you know what? They want us to come together as a city. Are you going to tell us that we're all in the same boat again?
We're all in this together. Hashtag.
Yeah. Hashtag Chicago strong. Come on.
All in Illinois.
Who buys this rap? I know people do.
Oh, they do. They swear by it. And that's their God. And that's their Bible.
And that's why it continues. They are not on your side. There's the inside and the outside. You think it's about race or orientation or any of these other identitarian categories, about wealth, about net worth? It is not. Inside and outside. Bruce in Waukesha.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Just a tongue-in-cheek comment. If Illinois decides to follow suit and take up legislation that California has just put into play with victims of gun violence being able to sue the gun manufacturers, mm-hmm. well, then that would just be the way to solve all this, apparently, in their world. So I just can't imagine, you know, Illinois doing that, because when you have all the violence that is happening, and you're going to have, what, victims now suing, you know, gun manufacturers for violence? Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, that's what the new California bill allows people to sue gun manufacturers.
Nothing over and over again, and they just dust off the things they used to do, and they try to do them again, yeah. or used to attempt to do.
Put a new coat of paint on it.
So you got Jelly Belly talking assault weapon ban, and you got California doing suing gun manufacturers. All they have are scams. Craig Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thanks for taking my call. It's Fox, Evan, Dart, Trickster, Lori Lightfoot, the whole bunch of them, all leftists, and the media to protect them. It's only a matter of time these thugs will be off the hook and everything like that. They were forced to raise those charges for those murderous thugs and everything like that. But when nobody's looking and everything, this blows by a little bit, they'll be letting them off the hook because they're doing the bidding of the left. The left loves this kind of thing. Not only all the mayhem and the pillaging and robbing of the cities and burning them down, but you heard a cop or kill a cop, they love it. They want it. This is what you get when you have these leftists and you got leftists voting for them. Who are these people that vote for these people is what I want to know.
Thanks, Craig. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hi, good morning, guys. The gym where I work, we have a huge banner right across the top, the whole length of the gym outside. It says, never forget. It was Officer French. It says, never forget Officer French, back the blue or something like that. And a big blue heart. We're a big men in blue. Yeah. And we don't, well, as a group, that's how we are. And why does Kim Fox, she hates the police. It's because she's home beating her freaking husband.
She's lucky she's not in jail.
Thanks,
we're on
Mary
electronic
Kay.
Monitoring.
Yeah,
I wonder if he hit her, he would be in jail. No questions asked.
I'm not worried about his physical safety. I'm worried about whether he got a new controller for his video game console.
Oh, I just love when 50-year-old men play video games like children. Oh my God, help them!
Some of the other unsolved crimes that we have to get to: Bobby Rush's popcorn yep. and Kim Fox's husband's video game controller. Tom in Mount Greenwood.
Yeah, Dan, listen, here's a true story. I'm a police officer. I'm on the way to work now. Nikia Fenner, Eddie Johnson's ex-wife, we all know that name, she's the commander of detectives, Area 2 out south. When the detectives are going to get the warrant signed for the third offender, which they picked up in Chicago Ridge at 96 in Ridgeland, she refused to sign the warrant because she wanted to know, why are we going after this without charging any of these Golden kids? And that's a true story. She wanted to know why these guys...
This is
Nakia Fenner, Eddie Johnson's ex-wife. She's uh-huh. now the commander of detectives, Area 2, which is Area South, 111th and Cottage.
Okay.
And she wanted Danny Golden charged?
She wanted to know, why aren't these Golden kids charged? Because there was, like, basically the whole crowd of mine, why aren't we charging any of these other white kids who were in this fight with battery? She would not sign it before that happened. She wouldn't sign it, so they'd go to a different area to get someone else to sign it. But she wouldn't sign it. Because you want to know, why are we not charging these Golden kids and that whole crowd that was at the bar with any kind of battery or any kind of charge at all?
Wow.
Oh, and that's just what you're dealing with in the police department now.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We're up against the clock.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Now, this is a productive development. Our friends, Bob Woodson and Glenn Lowry, who we spoke with on the show yesterday, have spearheaded an open letter that has been published at realclearpolitics.com, an open letter denouncing the attacks on Justice Clarence Thomas. Opening sentence: white progressives do not have the moral authority to excommunicate a black man from his race because they disagree with him. Well, that's going to be sorry, Naperville. Sorry, Hinsdale. Sorry, Glen Ellen. The UP hats. Let me repeat this. By the way, this is, you know, signed by, three or four dozen black professionals, academics, elected officials.
I think you're forgetting someone. Sorry, Mayor Lightfoot.
Actually, it's more than that.
Yeah.
No, white progressives.
White. Oh, okay.
But anyway, including like our friends, Charles Love is on there. Many names you'll recognize. Some great former Judge Janice Rogers Brown. Many. But anyway. White progressives do not have the moral authority to excommunicate a black man from his race because they disagree with him. I think that's such an elegant sentence because it sums up so much. And it, in one sentence, highlights the inanity of our political discourse, what we tolerate, and what is coming from the left, from these ghastly Jill Biden impersonators in suburban communities around the country and some of the wealthy enclaves in the big cities like where Amy lives. Mm-hmm. We, the undersigned, condemn the barrage of racist, vicious, and ugly personal attacks we're witnessing on Clarence Thomas, whether it's calling him a racist slur, an Uncle Tom, or questioning his blackness over his jurisprudence. The disparagement of this man, of his faith, and of his character is abominable. This is not about the content of the court's decisions or Justice Thomas's personal views. Some of the undersigned agree with his judicial decisions and some do not. We speak out as black people and Americans to condemn these attacks and support Justice Thomas because to remain silent would be to implicitly endorse these poisonous schemes as well as his destruction. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. For three decades, Justice Thomas has served as a model for our children. He's long been honored and celebrated by black people in this country, and his attackers do not speak for the majority of blacks. Regardless of where he stands, where one stands on Justice Thomas's personal or legal opinions, he's among the pantheon of black trailblazers throughout American history and is a model of integrity, scholarship, steadfastness, resilience, and commitment to the Constitution. If only he would be... have been made the first black Supreme Court justice like Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Oh.
Court swears it, first black Supreme Court justice.
Not really.
I mean,
like female? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Thurgood Marshall's calling.
Thurgood Marshall's going, turning over in his grave, like, hello. I was here first.
Yeah. And I mean, it is really telling just on the topic how conservatives treat Thurgood Marshall and his legacy as a Supreme Court justice as compared to how the left has treated Clarence Thomas since they knew who he was. I mean, I don't think Thurgood Marshall is a race traitor because I disagree with his judicial philosophy. And actually, on some things, obviously, I agree with his record. You know, there's some things in his record with which I agree. For example, his representation of Brown in Brown v. Board of Education before the Supreme Court. Yeah, he was on the right side of that. No question. But with Clarence Thomas, it's Uncle Tom, N-word, race traitor, and worse. Isn't that telling?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Will and Skokie are on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, the validity of a person or how good or bad he is should not be defined by how many reinforcing voices from the mainstream media they should get. Basically, we're seeing that with, like, with this 10-year-old girl rape victim thing, supposedly. Blood. If the media pronounce it and say it enough, then it makes real, which is crap, as long as you think about it. Have a good bye-bye.
Thanks, yeah, they say it long enough that then President Biden quotes a story that has no attribution whatsoever. Just one single source of a doctor that claims it.
Yeah, when we talked to Glenn Lowry yesterday, one of the things he said in terms of his treatment for daring to disagree with the leftist orthodoxy on college campuses, and remember, he's in the Ivy League, econ professor at Brown, yeah.
That he was ignored.
Yeah, that's what they do. If they can't demonize you, and they'll attempt to, I mean, they'll still make at least a, you know, give it the old college try when it comes to demonizing you, calling you names, you know, attaching the labels. But, right, they attempt to just ignore you if they don't think they can take you on.
Or control you.
If they don't think the demonization will work. But the demonization is necessary when you're in the lofty position of a Supreme Court justice. You can just ignore one or two or even a handful of college professors or business leaders. You know, they can be ignored. And you can also sort of put pressure on them without having to confront them directly. You can have, you know, astroturf some students to create problems around college campus or agitate some employees in a corporate setting to create havoc internally with a CEO who dares to deviate. But it's just tougher to get to Clarence Thomas, so you have to just continue the barrage relentlessly. Yeah. And something else, too. The attacks on Clarence Thomas and many of the undersigned in that open letter I just referenced, whether they're formal or they're sort of informal and just pushing them to the sidelines, trying to marginalize their voice rather than take them on straight away. I mean, note, Ibram Kendi, a.k.a. Henry Rogers.
Henry Rogers, I love that.
These individuals on the left, what do they do? What do they not do anymore? They don't debate. Ibram Kendi will not debate John McWhorter, who, as Glenn Lowry mentioned yesterday, liberal Democrat, even though the two of them collaborate on a lot of work because there are intersections of significant agreement. They won't debate. They won't confront, except with the mob to shout you down. Or to assassinate your character. That's the only way in which they will engage. Why is that? Well, part of it is because they're running a hustle. The other part of it is what they've actually done, what's actually occurred within these institutions over which they lorded for the last 60 years. They're all disintegrating. What's been the performance? Do you see cities and communities dominated by individuals who share this ideology thriving? All the things they promised and the way in which those promises would be fulfilled have turned out to be untrue. And in fact, worse than untrue, they've turned out to be destructive. So now what do you do? Now what do you do with people who are pointing out that here's what they said would happen. So here's what we did. And something very different happened than was promised. And it's decidedly negative. What do you do? you have to destroy those who are, you know, calling bull jive on what you said and what you did and what we did and what happened. And so that's why the most dangerous people in America for the left are the black conservatives, the Latino conservatives. Excuse me, the far right wing Latinas, New York Times blaring headline this week. The gay conservatives. Because those are supposed to be the identitarian soldiers protecting this empire of lies that the left has built over the last 60 years in particular. Really goes back at least 100, but in particular the last 60 years, they really put their foot on the pedal. Phil and Darian, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Listen, Dan, you were just saying that they don't debate anymore. That's because you can't debate anymore. If you don't agree with their lies, you're a racist, a bigot, a neo-Nazi, and so on. There is no debating. You agree with them, or you're a junk. You know, me and my mother-in-law don't agree on any issues at all. But at the end of the day, I respect her. She respects me. I love her. And we move on.
Mm-hmm.
See you guys.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Well, again, you know, it's just like, be a bit observant and think through these things. Why does Heterodox Academy exist? Why was it created, Jonathan Haidt and these other professors, academics? Why is the University of Austin being stood up? We talked about that a little bit with Glenn Lowry yesterday, too. New university with a commitment to the ideals that were supposed to, that did for a while and are supposed to inform higher education in this country, you know, consistent with sort of the founding ideas of the country. All of these alternative institutions that are being erected or attempted, and they include as participants many people that are on the center left. Why do you think that is? Because what Phil's describing is what they've lived. They've seen it. All these professor stories that we've gone over for so many years, people that are talented, actually really important in their fields and thus important for Western civilization. They're getting drummed out of their jobs or their positions in the academy. Why is that happening? It's sort of like what we talked about with that exchange last hour. That exchange between Josh Howley and that University of Berkeley, Cal Berkeley law professor, about men being able to give birth, and to suggest otherwise is to be a transphobe. You're observing it.
You get a front row seat to it yesterday.
Why? What is the play? That's what you should be asking yourself. What are they trying to do? What are they trying to cover up? It's the political version of follow the money. Follow the logic. Some are just repeating talking points. They have no logic. They have no depth. They're just useful idiots. Others are not. So when it's clear you're not talking to or addressing a useful idiot, observing a useful idiot, when it's clear that that's not one of those people, then ask yourself those questions. What's the play? What are they trying to do? What are they trying to misdirect away from? What are they trying to cover?
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Sports and politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and intersection. Arrogance and ignorance, arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance. Intersection.
Time for another installment of Sports and Politics. We got a bunch of topics under the heading Sports and Politics, so let's try to get through a few of them. LeBron James, let's start with LeBron, King James, since I mentioned him before Mike Scott's newscast. He's part of this show called The Shop, which is dudes talking in a barbershop, basically. My understanding of it, I don't listen because
They made a movie after it. Barbershop 1, Barbershop 2, Barbershop 12.
I think it's the other way around.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
I think the Barbershop movies predated the LeBron James shop. But anyway.
This is where people congregate and talk out, you know, their feelings.
The next podcast episode drops on Friday, but it was teased. And one of the topics was Brittany Griner's detention in Russia. Brittany Griner, the WNBA star, her detention in Russia going on 5 months. And this is what LeBron James said.
Brittany Griner, she is in Russia. She's been there
over 110 days. Now, how can she feel like America has her back? I would be feeling like, do I even want to go back to America?
Yeah, go someplace nice that LeBron likes, like Beijing. He tweeted, based on the reaction he got to this tease, that this is another anti-American statement from LeBron James. He tweeted, "My comments on the shop regarding Brittany Griner wasn't knocking our beautiful country. My comments weren't knocking LeBron. I was simply saying how she's probably feeling emotionally, along with so many other emotions, thoughts, etc., inside that cage she's been in for over 100 plus days. Long story short, hashtag bring her home." So LeBron wasn't being critical of this country. He was just channeling, because he has the capacity to know how women feel. Okay. Channeling Brittany Griner's feelings as she awaits the choppers from the Biden administration that aren't coming to get her out.
And they've tried, like, Al Sharpton was there with her wife trying to, you know, they were in Phoenix Mercury because she plays for the Phoenix Mercury. I'm sure you know that.
Uh-huh.
And what position is she? Center. But they were trying to, you know, drum up support. Nightly News led with it, you know, one night, and it didn't really catch on. And I don't, you know, if it was somebody else, if it was LeBron James that was stuck over there or Steph Curry, wouldn't they already be home by now?
Well, the more interesting question, which we've previously tackled, is if the president was Trump and not Biden, would she be home by now? And certainly the profile on this would be a lot higher. Trump would have taken a personal interest, and he would be talking about this and browbeating diplomats to work with Putin's goons to get her out. I think that's...
They're sending Bill Richardson, the former UN ambassador,
yeah,
to the U.S. To try and get her out.
The partner has gone on CNN to bitch about the administration's lack of response. I mean, I think rightly so, actually. Apparently, Brittany got a handwritten note out of Russia and to the White House. But yeah, we haven't had the big guy or Jill, who, you know, is their cultural attaché.
Si se poadre.
Right. She's down with the communities, the minority communities. Haven't seen, like, any real taking of this up. And so maybe that's what LeBron is channeling, too. And he doesn't even know it. Maybe he's not in touch with his own emotions. That why should she want to come back? When you got a President Biden in the White House, maybe she'll wait till 24, till things are a little bit better.
Yeah. But she did plead guilty in hopes of, you know, trying to get out.
Yeah, she
claims this is her attorney.
She pled out, but that's
she didn't. The trial would go on forever, so if she just pleads guilty, then they can start negotiating. That's according to Pete Williams from NBC News.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting legal strategy. Maybe that makes sense. I don't know, but there's the flip side of that too. When you plead out and you've admitted guilt, now they can just impose whatever sentence is available under Russian law. And
the maximum sentence is 10 years in prison.
And say, what are we arguing about? You pled out. And by the way, Russian law in quotation marks, since it's one man law there, you know, like it is in Illinois.
But her defense was, her attorney said that she was hastily packing. That's why those cartridges accidentally got put in her suitcase. But I'll tell you this, when you live but this is a teaching moment for everybody who lives in a foreign country, whether it be for a few months or if you're an exchange student, know what their laws are, because once you get into that country, your rights are gone. I mean, the State Department could try and help you out if you have a problem, but you got to know what the land of, you know, what the laws are of the land.
Yeah. If you want to put an exclamation point on it, just go watch Midnight Express again, and that'll really drive the point home.
Okay, fine. Everybody go watch Midnight Express.
All right, you have an offering for sports and politics.
Well, it's hockey, and JT Realmuto, he's not going to be able to join the Phillies in Toronto. Guess why? He doesn't have COVID. He's just vaccinated.
Is it hockey or baseball?
This is hockey.
Well, the Phillies are the baseball
team. Oh, I'm sorry. It's baseball.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. See, I've checked out of...
This is why we don't let you participate in sports and politics.
Can I try? Take two.
Uh-huh.
JT Realmuto is not being allowed to join the Phillies baseball team in Toronto to play the Blue Jays. I do know that. Because of his vaccination status.
How do you feel about it, I guess? You know, like, you know, some people say you're letting your team down. Teammates have supported you, though. So how do you feel about it?
I mean, yeah, it's an extremely unfortunate situation. Obviously, my teammates know how I feel about them and how bad I want to be out there with them. But it's just unfortunate that I'm not able to make the trip.
What are your reservations with
you? Why aren't you getting vaccinated?
I'm a healthy 31-year-old professional athlete. That I just didn't feel a need to get it. I've had COVID a couple of times and super mild symptoms back when it first came out. And when it came time to decide whether I needed a vaccine or not, I talked with a couple of doctors that I knew and told them my story and just really decided I didn't think I needed it. And I wasn't going to take it just because I was told to, basically. So
Even if it meant not missing, because you're going to forfeit a good amount of salary.
Yeah, but I mean, what's money when I'm not going to let Canada tell me what I do and don't put in my body?
Good for you.
A little bit of money.
That's awesome.
There's the money
line.
I heard that.
I'm not going to let Canada
tell me.
I'm not going to let that fifth grade drama teacher they elected PM tell me what to put or not put in my body.
Isn't
good for you.
Great. I loved his reaction, and he was very calm with those reporters because I would have been buzz off. It's none of your business why I'm not vaccinated.
No, that was better what he said. Much better to engage the way that he did. It was fantastic. Good for him. And it's unfortunate. It's one of the reasons I've fallen off paying attention to baseball, or as Amy calls it, hockey. Because I mean, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, these owners should be, they're the ones that are a disgrace, not that Phillies
player. Because he's got to forfeit some of his salary because he's missing these games.
Yeah, forget the salary. Well, they're an embarrassment. They're a disgrace. They're the reason I'm dumped my Sox tickets. I'm not paying, as I said, much attention other than to be culturally literate or generally know what's going on and who's winning what. Because of this sort of things. The complete politicization of sports, genuflecting before any government for any reason. Whether it's the Centers for Control here or the Public Health Department in Canada. I mean, come on. And you see the treatment. I mean, thankfully, you have a few professional athletes that are willing to stand up and just offer common sense. You have Djokovic, who's, you know, a dominant player in tennis.
Won Wimbledon.
Even though he's been a little squishy on it because he's trying not to be such a lightning rod. But he wins Wimbledon, and there's still these sports columnists who are just an extension of the political press corps. You know, trash him as, you know, Mr. Anti-vax and this and that. I mean, these guys are not trying not to be political. They're saying, I don't want to. You know, the incidence of myocarditis among young men in particular, these are some issues that have been raised. I don't feel it's a huge threat. You know, based on the science, I know it's not a huge threat. And there's some concerns about the vax, even though I know that's, if I got vaccinated, it probably wouldn't negatively affect me at my health. But I just don't want to do it. There's no urgency for me to do it, so I'm not going to do it. But there's just so few people that will stand up for themselves, particularly, and you would think, high-profile people that are insulated from most everything, but they still won't do it because of
Kyrie
money
Irving
or player.
It.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving's another one.
And also, too, because they consulted with their doctors. Like, remember Rizzo from when he was with the Cubs and he would not get vaccinated, but he's a cancer survivor because he talked to his oncologist, he talked to his general practitioner,
Anthony
and
Rizzo.
They told
yeah.
him, you know, for whatever reason, he should not get the vaccine.
So,
he got COVID and he's fine, and now his antibodies are strong.
But you can name that. Yeah, it's like one hand. Kyrie Irving, Djokovic,
Rizzo,
this guy from the Phillies.
You mean the hockey team?
The hockey team, the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, they have their mascot's the Philly Fanatic. He runs out on skates, shoots pucks. All right, one more here.
Yes.
UCLA, USC joining the Big Ten to make it the Big 16.
This is all about money, right? What's going on? Why?
More consolidation of conferences, which has been going on for a long time.
But the Pac-12, they're perfect in the Pac-12.
Yeah, well,
you know,
we go from coast to coast now, the Big Ten. You go from UCLA and USC to Rutgers. We got the Big Ten is
travel time.
Is national. There's a problem for UCLA, though. State school. Oh, you don't know? Yeah, you know. You're not allowed to spend state funds as a state institution to go to states that are backwards, that are governed by Philistines.
Like Indiana?
And Iowa and Ohio. Yeah. States where they don't allow men to pretend to be women to play sports, for example, and other requirements of California for other states if you're going to enjoy the Bruins coming to town. Really interesting. As of July, there are 20 states where California prohibits the use of state funds to pay for travel to a state. And they've been published by the state attorney general in California. Yeah. So no UCLA, Ohio State, no UCLA, Notre Dame.
Oh.
Outside the Big Ten. No UCLA, Indiana. No UCLA, Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Powerhouse, the juggernaut that it is. Thank you.
Yeah. How about that? Wouldn't that be interesting? Now, James Freeman writes about this in the Wall Street Journal that possibly UCLA can come up with a workaround, structure its activities to operate as a private entity beyond the reach of the law.
I don't want them to.
But, right.
Show your true colors right now.
Absolutely. And
forfeit the games and we win.
Well, that's not how it's going to happen. But as Freeman says, if they operate it as a private entity to get around California law, doesn't that just serve as additional proof that California's cultural cancellations are unworkable, unreasonable, intolerant, and overdue for repeal? Well, yeah, but try to tell that to Gavin Newsom, particularly as he's running for president. Just on the topic, since one of the main issues that led to the prohibition of the use of state funds for, in this case, a state school to travel to certain states that are not as enlightened as California. Shamika Michelle was on our friend Jason Whitlock's podcast recently. And she had this to say about men pretending to be women to play women's sports.
Look, I agree with everything you all have said, and it bothers me because if you were born a male, I don't care if you cut your penis off and dip it in chocolate. You are a male, and you have no business in female athletics. And it bothers me that the person that actually said something to the Washington Examiner had to say it anonymously because of fear, because they don't want to be seen as transphobic. I am so sick of us coming up with words that don't make sense. Listen, there is nothing in me that would be afraid of a man in a dress or a woman in a wife beater. You are already off and mentally ill. I'm only going to be a little bit intimidated if you have a larger gun or a quicker trigger finger. This makes no sense that no one is standing up saying anything about this. And when you talk about all of the male athletes that are not speaking up, I'm about one step from saying they are one step from starting a campaign that would state all booty holes matter, because it really seems that they are not being men. They are not protecting us as women, and they want to sit and bitch on TV all day long about things that don't matter. Yet they have daughters and sons who would be affected by this, but they're silent.
Yeah. Like so many of the parents and athletes on the Penn women's swim team.
Yeah.
Well, okay. But I agree with you with respect to UCLA. I hope the California state government, led by French Laundry Boy, I hope
Pretty
they
boy.
Force UCLA to live California values when they come to the Big Ten. Absolutely. That's exactly what should happen.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
All right.
Dan and Amy, but we didn't get to, in sports and politics, the live tour, because I still want to continue to keep track of this.
Every day Dan's on this guy, so don't worry.
I do want to take judicial notice of the great Tiger Woods weighing in, saying, I just don't understand it. I don't see how the move is positive in the long term for a lot of these players. There's Tiger Woods, as contrasted from Phil Mickelson, concerned about his legacy and the tour that afforded him the chance to be recognized throughout the annals of history as one of, if not the greatest golfer who ever played. So good for Tiger.
Now, on this tour, there's no cuts, right? And they just keep...
54 holes. They have a long drive prize. They got closest to the pin.
Can you buy string?
They got teams. You can buy string like we have there. You can buy string. You can buy mulligans. And then if you win, you get $100 million.
Oh, that's great.
It's just crazy.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. One postscript on our sports and politics segment last hour discussing USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Making it the Big 16. So now Northwestern basketball can finish 16th in the Big Ten instead of 14th. Amish texter texting in the one positive UCLA USC joining.
Yes. Okay.
Is that the average visual score of cheerleaders in the Big Ten will increase by about 300%. He is right about that.
Yes. He yeah. is.
All right. So that's one positive. I hate to just always focus on the downside. All right. Turning over to the next couple of days, we get some big numbers. And they're going to be big numbers, apparently. The consumer price index update today, the producer price index update tomorrow. And, you know, California is doing what it can. Like the big guy, doing everything they can to lower energy prices on their residents, particularly L.A. There's a proposal before the L.A. City Council to ban new gas stations in L.A.
Oh, come on.
This is not a difference anyone will notice in a city with well over 500 gas stations, said L.A. City Councilman Paul Koretz. They're the one we're at now. I can see another two blocks away. Well, there you go. Everything's fine. We just maintain things in a static fashion, regardless of market conditions, because, hey, Councilman Paul Koretz has decided we got 500 gas stations. That's plenty. Let's shut it down. Current gas stations also would be limited. No new pumps or repairs will be allowed.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. No repairs? Okay.
Only electric vehicle charging stations will be permitted. There you go.
To sit there for hours.
Well, again, if you want to get to no combustion engines in the state of California by 2035, you got to move. And you got to start imposing your will because people tend to be laggards. And that's why you have the discipline of the Newsom led state to make sure that this transition to a better tomorrow happens. For more on all this, please be joined by our friend Scott Shelady, the cow guy. Scott the cow guy. He's the market specialist for Market Day Report at RFD TV. Scott the cow guy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here.
What about that? This is a way that you can force the innovations that are necessary, as well as changing consumer habits, just start shutting down gas stations, not allowing them to repair their pumps, and then we can get to everybody driving Teslas sooner rather than later.
At some point in time, the American public's going to have to stand up and just call it for what it is, and it's absolutely ridiculous. There's only been really a couple of studies done about how much this will all cost if they want to get to these green mandates. And it's actually a new green agenda because there is no deal, right? There's no bargaining. It's just an edict, a mandate. They're telling us what's going to be happening without our input. Again, with the gas stations, I mean, why not let it go to free enterprise and market forces? No, we're going to have to mandate this, and it's all turning fossil fuel into this big evil thing, which got America to where it is today. I mean, it's 100%, but it's made us a much more wealthier country. Wealthier countries are smarter countries with better schools. They're healthier countries with better hospitals. they're safer countries with better armies. But these people don't understand that and don't get it, and they've turned fossil fuel into this big pariah. And it's unfortunate because I think a lot of these CEOs of these fossil fuel companies, I mean, they don't push back enough. I mean, they act like, you know, they act like they're selling cigarettes to 15-year-olds. You know, it's really starting to bother me, because now there's something happening around the world that a lot of folks in America are slowly but surely waking up to. I've been covering it extensively on my show, and it's now starting to get a little bit of traction in the mainstream media. But this ESG investing, which maybe you've probably talked about, Dan, but
yeah, right.
It's now bankrupt Sri Lanka, and I'm Dutch. These Dutch farmers are fighting back like hell. These ideas of trying to go green, not ideas, these mandates to go green are killing people. They're putting farmers out of business, putting businesses out of business. And Sri Lanka folded over the weekend. The farmers in Holland are not having it. They've been joined by farmers from Italy and Germany. But this is a joke. Well, and it needs to be called out for what it is. This is an absolute farce, you know. So Sri Lanka had an ESG score of 98 out of 100. That's awesome. Ours is 52, okay, just to let you know. And well, I wish it was 2, but yeah. Anyway.
Well, Scott, so what are they asking farmers in the Netherlands to do?
Give up
their
land.
To abide by nitrogen emission limits, which will put a third of farmers out of business by 2030. Now, they already have empty shelves in Holland anyway. And so now they want to kill a third of the farming community. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. They did it in Sri Lanka. The premier of Sri Lanka was held out over the last 4 years as the Green New Deal god, right, because he went 100% organic. But by going organic, they didn't put the right fertilizer. They had no fertilizer to put down on their crops. Their rice crop plummeted by 20%. The costs of things went up by 50%, and the government folded, and he's now on a boat with the president out in the middle of the water somewhere.
Hmm.
I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, some...
Literally on a slow boat to China. Yeah,
literally, yeah, and it might sink before it gets there.
Well, do you think that Biden's going to make farmers go electric with their tractors? Because, you know, I know those farm equipment costs millions of dollars, like about $1 million, and then other people rent out your gear. But that's, you know, how are they going to turn that
into
electric?
That's on the docket. That's on the docket. It's absolutely on the docket. And I just got some information through here this morning that they're going to start paying farmers in England not to farm.
Well, we do that here.
Yeah, that's true. But they want
to... We just have to scale it. That's the only thing. We just have to scale it.
Right. As my father said, it doesn't go over very well when I'm talking to a bunch of farmers, but he'd always say, you know, weather is not going to put a farmer out of business, but if you back over his mailbox, he's hosed.
Now, I hate to pull rank on you here, Scott the Cow Guy, but I'm appealing to a higher authority, the World Economic Forum,
Klaus Schwab.
Yeah, and the gang. They write recently, first, leading democracies should agree to end the underpricing of fossil fuels, which is the principal factor preventing a clean energy transition. The underpricing associated with producing and burning coal and gas amounted to $6 trillion in economic costs in 2020. The leading democracies of the G20 should collectively commit to phasing out costs and tax breaks for the production and consumption of fossil fuels, and they should phase in more efficient pricing of fossil fuels through taxes or tradable permits to cover the cost of local air pollution, global warming, and other economic damages. That's where we should be.
Yeah, okay. So I can just see Xi Jinping is asking where can he sign, right? No, that's absolutely not happening. And I think the best thing that our government could do here was to tell those guys to go get you know what, because, look, fossil fuel is going to be part of our lives for at least 50, maybe another 100 years, right? Somebody's going to come up with a cleaner way to burn it, and we do a better job than anybody else of pulling it out of the ground and burning it anyway. We're already the cleanest. We have to keep going down that road, right? So this idea that it's this great evil. I mean, Klaus Schwab and his World Economic Forum people are trying to beat everybody. It reminds me of the pandemic. They're trying to make everybody out there feel like they're the pollutant.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's exactly. Like, it's crazy. It's like, wait, my vaccine doesn't work. Your vaccine doesn't work if I don't have the vaccine. I don't understand that, right? We have to push back. I don't know how else to tell people. And plus, you know, I've got an agricultural background. We have a family farm. These people are already struggling. And to do what they want to do from the World Economic Forum, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist because I don't believe the government's smart enough to come up with a conspiracy. I really don't. You know, okay. The smart guys when I graduated from school got the best high-paying jobs. The guys who couldn't get a job went and canvassed for the local alderman, right? So I don't have any faith that they can come up with a secret and keep it. But there are some things out there that say that these World Economic Forum people absolutely believe that the world is overpopulated, and this is a way of slowly but surely taming the growth and or curtailing and cutting back.
What do we expect from the CPI and PPI reports in the next 24 hours?
I can tell you right now, obviously crude oil prices have come off, and I'm in the middle of the food thing, and the food's come off, you know, very, very sharply as well. I don't think it will be reflected in this report, so I think that this one will come in a little bit hotter. That'll be the headline. So right now they're expecting it to come in. Right now our inflation rate is 8.6%, and they're expecting this to be 8.8. And if that's the case, you know, that's going to embolden the Fed to raise rates again, and I think the Fed's going to overshoot because I think the economy is struggling right now mightily, and I think that you're going to start to see job cuts coming around the corner like you wouldn't believe. And I think that the tech sector in Silicon Valley is already getting, you know, preparing for that. And that's the last leg of stagflation that we really haven't seen happening. So we have we're raising rates into a slowing economy, maybe even an economy that could, July the 28th, be branded in a recession. And then now we're going to have these job losses. I mean, it's just not looking good.
Well, so you're talking about the June report, but then there's some suggestion, as you mentioned, gas prices have come off, food prices come off. There's some suggestion, and this was what the White House was touting yesterday, that in the near term, where the price of oil is, that we could see a 50 cents a gallon reduction in gas prices in the not too distant future.
Not from here, no. I think it's already, I mean, we've already had a large chunk of that happen already, the last 20 or 30 cents. That would be in that number to me. Because we do have a story in oil, and we just don't have enough of it. I mean, that's the bottom line. And here we are. You know, they're making fun. Everybody's giving all these golfers, you know, a bunch of grief for signing, you know, lifetime deals with, you know, exorbitant money. But then we've got our president going over there trying to shake hands and get oil off him. It just doesn't make sense to me. The hypocrisy is amazing.
Well, he's not going to shake hands because he's afraid of COVID, which
that's their new excuse. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, Saudi prince, I mean, he ordered the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. And then man was dismembered as well. Well, I mean, yeah, where they're on his knees. And
yes, it's horrible. I agree. But at the same time, the NBA is in bed with people, you know, the Chinese. That, you know, I mean, so everybody's got something, okay? The next 5 years are going to be critical here because we have a large part of the world that thinks that fossil fuel is evil, and it's not. And we have to embrace it rather than turn our backs on it. But the Green New Agenda is tough to stop. I just don't know what we're going to do because when people start starving, I mean, go green means go hungry. That's all it means.
Go green means go hungry. What's your short-term outlook, though, on inflation, assuming that the Fed does what it's predicted to do with a couple of more rate hikes?
I think they'll send us into a recession for sure. I think we're already in one, which means if we have the 28th, you know, the National Bureau of Economic Research, they're the one that have to anoint, you know. But they've been politicized already, so they're saying, well, we might have to wait until we see some more job losses. But they haven't had that in 50 years of saying we're in recessions. But I think that this will be a little bit hotter. It's going to embolden the Fed. They'll raise rates some more, and that's going to hurt the economy even more. We'll see more job losses down the road, and they'll overshoot. And maybe we'll probably be in a recession for a year, maybe. I mean, I don't see that growth coming, but we've had free money since 2008. I mean, it's going to be painful coming off, but ultimately.
But stagflationary recession?
Yes, yes.
So we're going to continue to be afflicted by high inflation as well.
Yeah, the expectations for inflation from this time next year, you know what that is? Between 6.6 and 6.8%, which is massively too high.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, in 1971, Nixon froze wages and froze production when he saw inflation hit 6.1%.
Wow. How high do you think mortgage rates are going to go, say, for like a 30-year fix? Yeah,
we can't handle anything really over 7 or 8. I mean,
but do you think they'll ever come down?
I'm not a good Huh?
Do you ever think they'll come back down? Because I have a friend in the mortgage industry who said, I think it's going to stay there for a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, but think about it, though. I mean, you have to remind ourselves that 6, 7, 8%, that was an awesome rate 20 years, you know, when I was, you know, in the 1990s, that was a really good rate. So we got addicted to free meth.
Yeah, right. And speaking of jobs, since you mentioned you think we're going to start to see some...
We're seeing them. I think we're seeing them right now already.
Starting to see job loss. Well, you had Google announce that they're reducing hiring for the rest of this year. So that's
Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also, because the party line from the big guy and team is we have this economy that's otherwise doing very well because of the low unemployment number. But in point of fact, we haven't added back all the jobs that were destroyed by the government during the pandemic. We're not even back to pre-pandemic levels 3 years ago.
I think we're like 500,000 short if by my math, but we haven't gotten back to it. So we're still replacing jobs that were lost over the pandemic, absolutely. So I think that you'll see that jobless rate, you know, go to 5%, 5.5%. I mean, that's the first thing everybody throws in your face when you say we could be in a recession. This is horrible. No, we have 11 million jobs, you know, open jobs. I think we're advertising jobs but nobody wants, and the government counts them. I mean, I think that's ultimately what it is. Nobody wants them. They're not really good. Nobody, you know. And then at the same time, we have a 3.6% unemployment rate because nobody's working. So that'll go up to 5, 5.5, maybe 6, and then we'll still have 6.5% inflation, and you'll still be paying $5 a gallon for gas.
All right, happy
that
days are here
great.
Again.
Thanks
yeah,
for
thanks,
stopping
Scott.
By.
Appreciate it.
Here's my new line, right? They say, I'm not going to be the guy that tells you the nice view of the when you're in a car going over the cliff. I need to tell you what's going to happen when you get to the bottom.
Yeah, you need a cleanup crew.
Right.
Scott the Cow Guy Shalady. Shalady. I promise Shalady. I would start saying your name correctly. Scott the Cow Guy Shalady. All right. Market specialist for Market Day Report at RFD TV. He also does his own show, The Cow Guy Close. So you want to check that out every afternoon as well. Scott, thanks for joining us as always.
All right, have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, did you see this? Bradley Cooper?
What about him?
Do you know who Bradley Cooper is? Bradley Cooper is reportedly dating. Don't you read Page Six?
Oh, no, no, wait. Lady Gaga?
No.
They can relive their moment on screen. Who? Oh, God, don't tell me Madonna.
No.
Please. Cher? Is it Cher?
No, he's dating somebody who's under 70.
Okay, wait, hold on.
Cher?
If I could turn back time.
Yeah, not bad.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Half breed. It's all of it.
Anthony Weiner's old lady.
What?
Uma Abedin.
No, he's not.
Yes.
No, he's not. Give me that.
Anna Wintour set
no.
them up.
What?
Yeah.
Uma?
He's taking Anthony Weiner's sloppy seconds. That's Bradley Cooper.
No, he's not. His mom would never allow that.
His mother,
his mom is with him all the time. It was weird.
Well, Vogue editor Anna Wintour, the Devil Wears Prada, shows up. Culturally hip, I am.
Oh my!
She is the worst matchmaker in the world, apparently. But she's good friends with Bradley Cooper, and she's the one who set it up. Page Six has it. Look, see, you don't believe it. You think it's a Babylon Bee? It's not.
Uma this is the Abedin, top aide to Hillary. This Hillary Clinton's BFF.
Yeah, silent Uma. Yeah, the H is silent. So is she.
How old is she? What is this? 47.
Cooper's
47.
She's 45. I read it, yeah.
And he's 47.
I mean, it's, you know.
Age appropriate, but is it appropriate at all? I don't know.
Ooh-wee.
Things are getting
I know.
Hot in here. Things are getting really pasty.
I mean, it's just a sad. I mean,
I feel dirty.
Like, it feels like some sort of like political redistribution dating, the dating version of it.
Yeah. Okay, we gotta go to break. I gotta wash this out of my system.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Get to Danny Golden here straight away, but the number just came out, and it's worse than expected. Inflation surges to new 40-year high. CPI rises to 9.1% in June.
Ooh.
The estimate was 9.1, so that's a new high. So don't expect to see prices recede in the near term. All right. Returning to a topic we covered a bit earlier, but we've got more on it. Danny Golden is the off-duty cop who was shot outside that Beverly bar on Saturday night after he had broken up a fight. The three individuals who were involved in that shooting him and paralyzing him, are in custody and being held without bond.
That's a start.
And it's a novelty.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. But originally, Kim Fox was just going to charge them with weapons violations, and people were enraged. I mean, I don't know if you were watching social media yesterday, but and then Tom Ahern, who's a spokesperson for CPD, came two hours later, and said, no, now they face felony charges of aggravated battery with a firearm, and two of the three also face attempted murder charges. Well, that's nice, because they shot at him 22 times.
Well,
so what would they think? They're playing bullet dodgeball or something? I mean, what is wrong with our state's attorney's office? But
on the issue of the charging, we got a call when we tackled this earlier in the show from a CPD officer. He identified himself as a CPD officer
who was
on his way to work from Mount Greenwood. And he said this, too, to add a little bit more color. This hasn't been reported anywhere, but it sounds reasonable, and he sounded like he knew what he was talking about. He certainly knew the players in the process on why appropriate charges for the individuals involved in the shooting were held up. Tom in Mount Greenwood.
Yeah, Dan, listen, here's a true story. I'm a police officer. I'm on the way to work now. Nikki Fenner, Eddie Johnson's ex-wife, we all know that name, she's the commander of detectives, Area 2 out south. When the detectives are going to get the warrant signed for the third offender, which they picked up in Chicago Ridge in 96 in Ridgeland, she refused to sign the warrant because she wanted to know, why are we going after this without charging any of these Golden kids? That's a true story. She wanted to know why these guys...
This is...
Nakia Fenner, Eddie Johnson's ex-wife, she's now the commander of detectives, Area 2, which is Area South, 111th and Cottage.
Okay.
And she wanted Danny Golden charged?
She wanted to know, why aren't these Golden kids charged? Because there was, like, basically the whole crowd of mine, why aren't we charging any of these other white kids who were in this fight with battery? She would not sign it before that happened. She wouldn't sign it, so they'd go to a different area to get someone else to sign it. But she wouldn't sign it because she wanted to know, why are we not charging these Golden kids and that whole crowd that was at the bar with any kind of battery or any kind of charge at all?
Wow.
Oh, and that's just who you're dealing with in the police department now.
Thanks for the call, Tom. So it's not just Kim Fox's office.
No.
Is the point. And that's an important one. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And by the way, in terms of why are we not charging the Golden kids or whatever or anybody else, my understanding is that Danny Golden broke up a fight.
Right. He went out there. He was a good Samaritan.
Didn't initiate a fight.
He was a hero in this.
Wasn't participating in the fight. Broke up a fight.
And these three thugs enjoyed this so much, Dan, that they're going to do it again next weekend, or so they thought.
The defendants also joked about the incident afterwards, stating, quote, let's get drunk this weekend and start a bar fight.
And so where does this, by the way, I should mention, and I'll tweet this out shortly.
Yeah.
There's a GoFundMe page for Danny Golden trying to raise $1.5 million. They've already got almost 6,000 donations totaling $778,000. One person donated $50,000.
Wow. Good
so,
for them. And the family's well known. He will be getting married next year, but he's not going to be able to walk down the aisle because he's paralyzed from the waist down. He comes from three generations of Chicago police officers.
So a part of it is, you know, where do these people come from that have such disregard for the lives of others?
Joking around about it and saying we're going to do it again next week.
Uh-huh. What's the...
devil, man.
What's the cultural rot? Where does this cultural rot come from? And so this video that's gone viral out of St. Paul, Minnesota, where you have basically a toddler...
He was in his underwear.
Yeah, well, he and other pre-adolescent kids in their underwear.
They're babies.
And they were accosting St. Paul police officers. I mean, not in any, like, material way. They couldn't hurt them. I mean, just a little. I mean, it's a little kid. The kid came up to the officer's knee, maybe. And it's hard to hear in the video, but you need to watch it because you need to see this toddler, 2-3 years old. How old do you think he is?
I think he's about 3, maybe, yeah, max. Yeah. But he's in his underwear and he's a baby. I mean,
he's punching, he's kicking, he's cursing, he's throwing rocks at police.
Swearing.
Keep saying shut up, bitch, kicking, like, you know, wildly throwing his arms. So,
and there's a kid behind him, or baby girl, who looks about 2 years old, in diapers behind him.
This used to be like a bit. Like Chappelle did a bit about this. Like, do you remember the Chappelle show? Not Chappelle show, it was a stand-up bit about baby selling crack on the corner. He pulls up in his limo with a bad neighborhood, and, you know, and Chappelle's like, baby, what are you doing out here? Baby, get back inside. That's a bit that he did. This is reality. So where does a 3-year-old learn to curse officers, say shut up, bitch,
and punch them? I mean, my God, the video is so it's so strange. And they're black officers too; they're not white officers.
So where, what's ahead for that 3-year-old?
A life of hell if they don't get him out of that family.
You know, we want to know where these people. How do we get these people who grow up with such hatred and disregard for other people's lives? And then you watch that video and it sort of brings it home. John in Bridgeport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Real quick, guys. I know the name Fenner was brought up, a lieutenant in the police department. Don't forget, she was the one caught up in the cheating scandal, who became a sergeant and then scored in the top 3 in the lieutenant's list, but has no common sense to even show that she's capable of doing that, but yet she got rewarded, and this is what happens. Second of all, right now we're in a place in society where those that come from a broken-down home want to tell those who come from a solid home what to do, and it sucks. Thanks.
Thanks, John. We are in such a society. Jason Riley writes about it in the Wall Street Journal. The pursuit of social justice is getting people killed. Sort of the conversation we were having earlier, like, understand the implications of this stuff that you see around you that causes you to roll your eyes or shake your head. It's not just ridiculous. It's also lethal. Sunday, the Philadelphia Inquirer reported on its front page, Philadelphia, another Dem-dominated machine city. Report on his front page, city council president wants to revisit stop, question, and frisk. Oh, really? Really? Philadelphia's district attorney, meanwhile, Larry Krasner, another Soros-funded non-prosecution, decarceration prosecutor, prides himself on not prosecuting lawbreakers. The results, what you might expect, the city set an all-time record for homicides in 2021. Blacks are a little bit more than 40% of the city's population, but 85% of those killed. Same thing in Chicago. In addition, 1,800 people were shot and wounded last year, which might be related to the fact that more than 60% of those people arrested on gun charges faced no penalty and were turned loose.
Oh, my God. What did they think was going to happen?
Same thing here.
Is it 60%?
Ms. Krasner nevertheless insists, we don't have a crisis of lawlessness, we don't have a crisis of crime, we don't have a crisis of violence. The former mayor of Philadelphia, Michael Nutter, who is no conservative. It takes a certain audacity of ignorance and white privilege to say that right now. I have to wonder what kind of messed up world of white wokeness Krasner is living in to have so little regard for human lives lost, many of them black and brown, while he advances his own national profile as a progressive district attorney. Well, that's wonderful. Race has nothing to do with the matter. Behavior does. And so, where is any Democrat in Chicago? I mean, other than like the people that run against her, you know, that ran against her, like Bill Conway. I mean, but that's not cutting it. Where is this sort of repudiation of Kim Fox, or even what's happening in the Chicago Police Department, from the Democrat socialist ranks who dominate the city's governance? Where is that? Where is our Michael Nutter in Chicago, a Democrat calling out this attitude towards lawlessness and death? Yeah. On social justice, since it's thrown around so much, you may want to telescope Thomas Sowell's explanation of justice versus social justice. Jason Riley recounts it in his piece. Just like equity is the opposite of equality, social justice is the opposite of justice. That's why they have to add social. It's social means not justice. You understand? Don't let people get away with it. Everybody uses that phrase and it goes unchallenged. As Sowell has written, a defendant in a criminal case would be said to have received justice if the trial were conducted as it should be under fair rules, with the judge and jury being impartial. After such a trial, it can be said that justice was done regardless of the outcome. By contrast, rules and standards equally applicable to all are deliberately set aside in pursuit of social justice. It's the antithesis of justice. Equity is the antithesis of equality. Social justice is the antithesis of justice. Understand? Distribute. Distribute. In Philadelphia, mentioned yesterday, the great disintegration of the great cities. This 73-year-old man who was beaten to death with a traffic cone.
Oh, so sad.
Philadelphia police are questioning two boys ages 10 and 14 in his beating death. 10 and 14. And then you see that toddler in St. Paul, Minnesota, and you wonder how a 10 and 14-year-old could possibly be involved in the beating death of a 73-year-old man.
This toddler is just repeating what he's heard his dad say to his mom or something, or his mom say to other people.
Or politicians on TV say.
I mean, how could he have that much disdain for a police officer? How does he know what hate is at that early age? I mean, he's enraged. He's going after their foot, then he's going after their arm. I mean, I'm surprised he didn't grab their gun out of the holster.
And in New York City, where you have a bodega, or as Joe Biden calls it, bogota.
A bogota.
Bogota. Bodega clerk arrested for and charged with murder and held on, I think he had to post $50,000 to bond out. Defending himself from what we see from the shop videos now would be really two attackers. The woman who was irate, who brought her boyfriend in, who attacked and battered the shop owner, Jose Alba,
yeah, and then
her herself apparently seeming to stab Alba when he was defending himself. He's under murder charges. He had to post $50,000. No, he had to post $50,000 to get out, I believe was the number. By contrast, New York's no bail law has helped free two Mexican drug cartel smugglers arrested with about $1.2 million worth of crystal meth. So we turn the criminals out and we prosecute the law-abiding, hardworking clerk of a convenience store for defending himself. Social justice is the opposite of justice. Judy in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, my name is Judy. I recently moved from Illinois to Georgia because I needed to get out of there. But I listened to that excerpt from the toddlers insulting the police. Why, when Child Protective Services be called or something?
Right, get that kid out of that
terrible.
Thank you.
Sorry for stepping on you, but I know that's the first thing I thought of. If that child has a chance in this world, He needs to be taken out. And same with his little sister who's in the diaper behind him.
Thanks for the call,
kind of like
Judy.
Supporting it.
Uh-huh.
So bizarre.
Thank you for that prompt. Why wouldn't DCFS be called?
Or their version of it in St. Paul.
Yeah. Right. If it happened in Chicago, DCFS, you wouldn't want to call DCFS. You know why? The child could end up dead.
Yeah. 8 kids have died in the last 8 months. 8 children.
You just had a mom arrested for the death of her 8-year-old daughter, Amaria, and dad is speaking out. Here's a report from ABC 7 on DCFS here. You think it's better in most of these other major cities where you have the same sorts of people in charge, and by that I mean same ideology, non-prosecution, decarceration, social justice, identitarian Marxists.
The DCFS director has been held in contempt of court a dozen times since January for the agency's failures in properly caring for or protecting children. The father of one girl who recently died while under DCF oversight says something needs to change.
DeMarcus Osby is still in shock over the death of his 8-year-old daughter, Amaria, the young girl found suffocated in the bedroom of her Chicago home on May 25th. Authorities have charged her mother, Andrea Hagler, with the murder.
The same system that's in place that was supposed to protect my daughter is the same system that failed my daughter.
DCFS's history with the family dates back to 2017 when Hagler was arrested for driving drunk with Amaria in the car. In March, her father called DCFS after an argument with Hagler.
Her mother had lashed out on me, and I was afraid that she would pretty much take it out on my daughter.
On May 24th, an investigator finally made contact with the family and noted no concerns. Hours later, Amaria was dead. In court, prosecutors told the judge that the mother confessed and said her daughter's last words were, "Mama, stop."
Oh, come on. Please.
That's the city you live in. They are not on your side. Not DeMarcus Osby's side, not Amaria's side, not anybody who follows the rules in this city.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. I believe we should end abortion on demand. And at every opportunity, I have translated this belief into votes in the House of Representatives. I'm opposed to the use of federal funds to pay for elective abortions and will continue to support amendments to prohibit the funding of elective abortions for federal employees and Medicaid recipients. Also, notwithstanding the result in Weber, I continue to believe the Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade should be reversed. You know who wrote those words?
Joe Biden?
No, but Joe Biden has said similar things.
Oh, yeah, back in the 80s.
Yeah. Those are the words of one senior senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin. In a letter he wrote in 1989. And good for Senator Mike Lee from Utah for reading Durbin's letter into the record during yesterday's Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on life in America post-Dobbs, post the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We've noted this before, but it's worth noting again the change in political position when the party started being dominated by third-wave feminists and cultural Marxists intent on destruction of the nuclear family. And that's when hustlers like Jesse Jackson Sr. and Dick Durbin and Joe Biden, who are just company men for the left looking to be paid and maintain status and power, that's what they'll do. They'll sell out unborn children just like that if it means their political survival or continuing ongoing political relevance. And that's exactly what those individuals did.
And yesterday at that same Senate committee hearing, our Lieutenant Governor, Juliana Stratton, she says we need more federal funds to pay for abortions because Illinois is going to be a hub of abortions.
Creating some sort of hub so that there can be some sort of coordination among states to make sure that women, that people, Americans, are getting the health care that they deserve and need.
And she got out a map showing, you know, all the states surrounding Illinois that have abortion restrictions. And then she got into it a little bit with Senator Tom Cotton about, you know, it's not the pro-life places that are being attacked. It's the abortion clinics, Dan. They're the ones under attack.
Do you condemn the violent attacks, firebombings, and vandalism by groups like Jane's Revenge?
Let me just say, I will emphasize that violence against anyone is wrong. All across the board, violence is unacceptable. And we know that we are seeing violent acts as well as threats and attacks also on abortion providers and clinics.
Really? Then I would have followed up. Where? Which ones?
Yeah.
Which
Planned Parenthood mill was bombed, was firebombed? Which
had graffiti scrawled on the outside of it.
Right. But I do appreciate that our illustrious lieutenant governor corrected herself when she said women talking about abortion, and then she moved to say people. Much more consistent with the testimony of Berkeley law professor Kiara Bridges, who referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. That's the language of the left when it comes to all things gender related, because
we play that soundbite again,
because again, to offer anything other than that, to suggest that men who identify as women can't be pregnant, that's transphobic, and that's violence too. So that's part of the violence. I'm sure Juliana Stratton would agree. That's part of the violence coming from the right to the left, is suggesting that men can't get pregnant. That is transphobic, and that's violent. That puts transphobic trans people in physical jeopardy, was the argument of this Berkeley law professor in exchange with Josh Hawley, the Republican from Missouri.
Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women?
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue. We can recognize
that this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Oh, so your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing them.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancies?
So I want to note that one out of five transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important
because of my line of questioning.
Because
we can't talk about it.
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know that they exist.
I'm denying that trans people exist by asking you if you're talking about women having pregnancies.
Do you believe that men can get pregnant?
No, I don't think so.
So you are denying that trans people like this thing?
And that leads to violence? Is this how you run your classroom? Are students allowed to question you?
Absolutely.
Or are they also treated like this?
Where no,
they're told that they're opening up people to violence.
We have a good time in my class. You should join.
Oh, I bet.
You might learn a lot.
Wow, I would learn a lot. I've learned a lot just in this exchange.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary.
It is extraordinary.
I never forget that interchange.
That's what you're up against. For more on the topic, pleased to be joined by Tom Brekka, President and Chief Counsel, Thomas More Society. Tom, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Glad to be with you.
We mentioned, speaking of violence, we mentioned what happened to you at your home recently in Evanston, where Evanston police had to be called, and there were people protesting outside of your home, pro-abortion people. I don't know if it was just women or it included people with a capacity to be pregnant. But just tell us the story of what happened there and what police needed to do to provide for your safety, speaking of safety.
Well, thanks, Dan. The FBI had tipped off the Evanston police, who knocked on our door to say that the next evening after dark, this group, and they were really Antifa sorts, they were anarchists, were coming to stage a protest. And the FBI had said this was a group prone to violence and that we should take precautions. We should not be home. That would provoke them. So, in fact, we went to a dinner party with friends. Coincidentally, it was in Highland Park, which later, 2 days later, was a scene of worse violence. But the people came, according to our neighbors, 40 to 50 of them, and they shouted obscene chants. They, you know, the F word toward the Supreme Court, toward our Thomas More Society.
So Lori Lightfoot was there.
I'm sorry?
No, so Lori Lightfoot must have been there if the F word was being used. I don't know.
No. Actually, there were no women, apparently. Our neighbor is a gay rights advocate with a rainbow flag hanging outside her house, and apparently she had guests, and they were out and complained, why are there no women among you?
Really? What did they say to that?
Well, I don't know. We weren't there. The neighbors didn't hear the exchange. I don't think they were in a talking mood. They were angry and... You know, it was supposed to be a means of letting us know how terribly they felt about the reversal of Roe v. Wade. So,
but then they took
started
it
to drop smoke bombs and threw paint bombs at the house and so forth. So we've had a little cleanup to do. And you know, they uprooted my wife's rose bush. They were not nice people. And the police were there in force, in squad cars, parked along the curb. But apparently they were taken by surprise when the crowd, you know, became violent suddenly and started doing this damage.
Well, was anyone arrested?
Well, if they were there, you know.
Well, wait. But if they're there and not making arrests, don't you feel that the system cheated you in some way? I mean, why didn't they, if they saw them launch the paint bombs, you know, take down the rose bush, why didn't they arrest him?
Well, I don't know. That's a question, and we're going to pursue the matter. We're supportive of our police. We need them. They may come back. In fact, the police predicted they would. So we're ready. We've got a security system, and I do hope somebody will be held accountable. We had some private detectives taking note of, you know, where they assembled in a nearby park, you know, so we may be able to find out who they are, and we may try and hold them accountable in some way. I think that.
So you're certainly not afraid.
Should be,
yeah. You're certainly not afraid to sign a complaint for property damage and the like if anybody is identified as a responsible party.
Absolutely not, Dan. I think that we've got to oppose violence, and frankly, I think that's the problem with abortion. I think it's violence against others within the womb, not yet born, but it's just abortion on demand, as Senator Durbin so eloquently stated.
It's not in 1989. Yeah, right. Tell our audience, if for those unfamiliar with the Thomas More Society, what you do and thus why you were targeted. You sort of indicated that based on what you just said, but provide more color in terms of what Thomas More Society does.
Well, I think they gave us more credit than we deserve, maybe, for overturning Roe v. Wade. Our role is sort of a conservative version of the ACLU. We represent protesters, and we went up to the Supreme Court three times in opposing the use of racketeering laws against organized protests. You know, the late Joseph Scheidler, based in Chicago, had formed a network of protesters around the country, and the opposition sued him under the antitrust laws and then under the racketeering laws, and that we thought was an outrageous misuse of those laws. It took 28 years and the three Supreme Court appearances, but we prevailed. So I suppose in that sense, that's why they felt we were responsible for the success, finally, of the folks in Mississippi in getting Roe versus Wade overturned.
So this is an important juxtaposition. So you represented a client, Joe Scheidler and company, peaceful protests. So you're a proponent of peaceful protesting. Anybody can peacefully protest in favor of or against anything they want. And yet what the left has become now is opposed to any sort of expression of opposition to their viewpoint, such that they're willing to go to violent lengths to enforce suppression.
Well, I think that's exactly the truth. When we were in the Supreme Court, we were supported by a whole spectrum of protest groups, including Dr. King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They realized better than anybody that, the RICO racketeering law was passed 2 years after Dr. King was assassinated, and yet it could have been used against him, for peaceable protest, what he called peaceable nonviolent direct action in his letter for Birmingham Jail, April 63. And that's essentially what some of the pro-life people were doing, with their rescue movement. And that was the focus of the case that went on for 28 years. And, it took a long time, but I think America came to its senses and the Supreme Court recognized that, a trespass is illegal, but it's not racketeering. and of course, just free speech, protected free speech was brought into the case, as if somehow that were part and parcel of peaceable nonviolent direct action. And I'm very happy to say we won. It was a tough struggle. But we continue to represent people who pray outside abortion providers and otherwise exercise their religious liberty. Mm. And do so in the public square.
And they're not pushing out of Evanston. You're going to stick it out there?
Well, we're here for we've been here 43 years, and we're not going anywhere, Dan. We're going to keep doing what we do, and I hope do it even better. It's an interesting coincidence. When we first moved in here, it was, 1978, there was some tumult within a days of when we arrived. And what was it? Well, in this nearby park, the Nazis, who won the right to march through Skokie in the U.S. Supreme Court, well, they didn't march through Skokie. They won the right to march, but they chickened out. Instead of going to Skokie, they went to our nearby park. I think there were three or four of them. And so protest in Evanston has got a little bit of a history, I guess. I don't know. I wish next time, though, the police would be a little bit more aggressive and interventionist and not simply observe. And, they borrowed our garden hose, they told us, and tried to spray some of the paint off the house. But no, it didn't all come off. So
I should have been spending their time chasing them down and arresting them.
Well, how much damage when you get tipped off by the FBI that they're prone to violence?
How much damage would you say was done to your property?
Well, we don't have to rebuild the house or anything like that. But, it was very, very hard. We had several people come with power washers trying to get the obscenities off the sidewalk. A little boy came by with his mother and said to my wife, who was outside, "These are nasty words. You've got to cover them up with tape."
Oh, my God.
but they're largely off. They put down, for example, the A, the anarchist symbol, a big capital A with a circle around it. Interesting. And they tore up an American flag. Part of what they chanted, we're told by our neighbor, was "Death to America." So what does that tell you? It's a very, very strange group of folks.
Be careful. Because it's, if the cops said that they'll be back. And I mean, not to tell you what to do, I would really stay on Evanston Police and ask them why they just sat there and watched and didn't stop it.
Well, on the other hand, Amy, we're really happy they were there.
Yeah, right.
Worse, I think, would and could have happened. And so we want to compliment them for their powerful response. They did talk to the people when they were having a little parlay over at the park before they came. They closed off the neighborhood. Our private detectives were barred from coming into the area, which is too bad. But, they did what they thought was right. And I think they didn't realize that when it comes to residential picketing, it's not permitted by law to focus on a single home. You've got to keep moving through the neighborhood. And that was overlooked. And
just like in D.C. I mean, you're lucky in Evanston that you still have police, that they haven't been replaced by Antifa, since you basically have leadership that would be very comfortable in Portland. At least you got that going for you. Tom Brekka, President and Chief Counsel, Thomas More Society. ThomasMoreSociety.org is the website. It is a nonprofit public interest law firm. Tom Brekka, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you. You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, another good investigation out of realclearinvestigations.com. Friend of the show, Mark Hemingway, along with Ben Weingarten, looking at this rather arcane aspect of how the Social Security Administration manages records, the Social Security Administration's earnings suspense file. That reflects the earnings of employees whose W-2 wage and tax statements have names and Social Security numbers that don't match official records. So sort of an indication there could be fraud afoot. And the exponential increase in the amount of money reflected in that record system, the earnings suspense file, how that has increased exponentially over the last couple of decades, and what that means for what kind of handle we have on the presence of persons in this country illegally and, by extension, working here illegally. For more on this investigation, the details and the implications, please be joined by Ben Weingarten, Deputy Editor at RealClearInvestigations.com. Ben, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate it.
So, yeah, please go through the look-see that you did and sort of building off of that aspect of SSA that I mentioned, the earnings suspense file, you know, what we're to understand, take away, what questions we should have based on the research you did.
Yeah, I think this is a remarkable story, sort of a microcosm of the willful blindness of our federal authorities and, frankly, beyond, in terms of the scale and scope of the influx of illegal immigrants into this country and the turning the other way when we have information about fraudulent behavior and a lack of enforcement of it. So to your point, this earnings suspense file, which is a repository of essentially all the earnings where people submit their W-2s and the names and Social Security numbers on those W-2s don't match what's on file with the Social Security Administration. The earnings in that file have increased from around $190 billion at the dawn of the millennium to $1.9 trillion in 2021. And authorities have said that this increase in the ESF, the earnings suspense file, is largely attributable to non-citizens, illegal aliens, who are using Social Security numbers that almost definitionally, there are some illegal aliens that actually are able to lawfully obtain a Social Security number, but it's a small percentage, is attributable to those putting forth Social Security numbers that are not their own to get jobs in America. And they obtain these Social Security numbers in a variety of ways. Some engage in outright Social Security number theft. Others conjure numbers out of thin air. Still others use those of friends, acquaintances, or perhaps if they had children in the country, their children's actual Social Security numbers, or they buy them from dealers or on the dark web, these Social Security numbers. And so what is the scope and scale of it? Beyond that $1.9 trillion, which is a proxy in part for the increase in the illegal alien population in the U.S. labor force, well, government authorities have told us going back now 5 to 7 years that there were well over 1 million individuals using identities that were not their own in an individual year. I believe year was 2015 or 2017 that the U.S. government had on file. And what's really remarkable about this, and let's be clear, again, these are Social Security numbers, again, that could be stolen. They could be other people's Social Security numbers. And so they're real victims here. It's not necessarily a victimless crime, which we can talk about. What's remarkable about this is that the ESF represents a file that has a population that U.S. authorities could pursue, and no government agency seems to have a willingness to actually go out and enforce the law. The IRS has essentially said what they care about is people paying their taxes, not whether they're engaging in fraud or not. And they do not share the information that they have in this file with other authorities like ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And the last point worth making here, again, is that this is not a victimless crime. There are tens to hundreds of thousands of Americans, and there hasn't really been a lot of reporting on it in the last over a decade by the legacy media, but they used to report on this, individuals who are saddled with the credit histories, criminal records, and of course, just the earnings records of individuals using their Social Security numbers fraudulently. And this creates major problems if you are a victim of this identity theft that are very hard to remedy, and that the relevant authorities may well not contact you until you have a serious problem with the IRS or beyond. So it's a huge problem for tens of thousands of Americans as well, and no one seems to want to do anything about it.
And so if there were law enforcement action to be taken, I mean, this is the primary job of the FBI? Who do you go to and say, I mean, do you go to Christopher Wray and say, why is there not a task force dedicated to addressing this identity theft?
Yeah, so if you look at the handful of investigations that have transpired in terms of Social Security theft fraudulence, particularly involving illegal aliens, typically it's going to implicate DHS through Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as well as the DOJ and perhaps state and local authorities as well. So it would be several law enforcement bodies implicated here because there are a raft of crimes at play here. And again, what's remarkable is that, and the sort of the argument made for why there is sort of a Chinese wall between, say, the IRS and Social Security Administration and a DHS or the FBI/DOJ here is that it's for protecting individuals' privacy. The fact that there's been no push in Washington, D.C., or no appetite to sort of push back on that and say, look, individuals' IDs are being stolen, used by people who are in the country illegally in the first place, to take American jobs, arguably, and then to engage in this raft of related crimes, potentially. No one has made that argument, really, in Washington, D.C. And as we note in the article, you know, there have been several bills just trying to get at whether the IRS can even present, whether they can figure out what this population is, who it is, and how they might go about identifying and enforcing the law. Even those sort of bills languish. E-Verify is probably the landmark piece of legislation in terms of worksite enforcement here. E-Verify, which allows people to access DHS records to check these IDs out, for example, is in the vast majority of states voluntary. It's really only with federal contracting where E-Verify is mandatory. There's not a push across the states necessarily to mandate it or a federal mandate in place. So there's really a lack of will. And that lack of will, as we found, seems to largely stem from the fact that, again, the IRS wants people paying their taxes. That's essentially been their position on this. And then others, including progressives, have argued that, look, illegal aliens paying their taxes is a good thing because this helps to shore up programs that illegal aliens do not draw from, namely Social Security and Medicare. However, what they omit in speaking about the benefits there is the, of course, massive costs associated with illegal aliens working in the country. But nevertheless, folks in the IRS, SSA, and members of Congress as well tout the benefits, essentially, of illegal aliens fraudulently using other people's IDs to work in this country.
I'm sure if they get caught, they deport them, correct?
Well, naturally, you know, we found several examples that have been reported of individuals in the country illegally who were committed other crimes separate and apart from the identity theft, identity fraud, and essentially have gotten a slap on the wrist. Some of them in potentially heinous crimes. There appears to be little appetite to engage, of course, in either massive worksite enforcement. There were a few examples of it during the Trump administration in particular, but not many. The most we saw essentially in the last 4+ years was the issuance of these no match letters, where the IRS would send letters en masse to employers who had individuals working on their books who the IRS knew submitted ideas that did not match those on file with the federal authorities. But there was not an effort to enforce the law at those workplaces. It was essentially put back to the employers themselves. That no match letter program had been terminated under the Obama administration. It's been terminated again under the Biden administration. And the Trump administration issued hundreds of thousands of these letters. So there really appears to be a turning of the other way by federal authorities, by law enforcement, and then, of course, by the employers themselves here.
The $1.9 trillion worth of earnings as of 2021 in that earnings suspense file, is there any way to guesstimate how many people that that number represents?
Yeah, so that's a good question. The ESF has not put out, I don't believe, any metric on how many people are encompassed in the file. Presumably also you'd have kind of double counting in that file if individuals over several years had these discrepancies in submitting their earnings. And that raises one other important point, which is the lack of information from authorities here. Those numbers that I put out about federal authorities, and this was generally through Treasury's Inspector General doing this research, of over 1 million instances of fraud found over a several-year period, and then 1 million plus instances of individuals submitting Social Security numbers that were not their own. They have not provided updated figures, just those ballpark, just the high-level figures, in a number of years now. And we reached out to all of the relevant agencies, SSA, IRS, ICE, and beyond, to try to get information on, okay, how big is this population? What are you doing, if anything, to enforce the law? You know, kind of what's your message to the American people on this? And it was really largely crickets in the course of our investigation. And I think the silence is kind of deafening on that point.
He is Ben Weingarten, deputy editor at RealClearInvestigations.com. Do check out this piece he co-authored with Mark Hemingway, this investigation they did. Willful blindness, feds ignore illegal alien ID theft plaguing Americans as U.S. coffers fill. We'll tweet that out here as well. Ben, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.
No sleep is right.
Dan and Amy, so I was thinking about this Bradley Cooper and Uma Abedin hookup.
That's, in case you don't know, that's Anthony Weiner's ex-wife.
Yeah, his old lady, ex-old lady. And I thought maybe, like, I don't know, her and Hillary.
Yeah,
maybe
because they were really close. They're like sister friends.
Maybe they're a throuple.
Ooh, no.
I don't know.
Now, remember, Bill Clinton did marry Anthony and Uma.
Yeah.
And Hillary was, I think, the flower girl. No, I don't. No, it was just, she was a witness to it. But I just, so, it just feels wrong. And it feels dirty. And I don't even want to talk about this anymore. And why do you keep talking about this?
The best way I could describe my feelings when I saw this on page 6 in the Post.
Feelings?
No, the best way I could, my reaction is I immediately thought of that Wings episode. Did you ever watch Wings?
Yes.
Great show. Underrated sitcom. When Roy dates Mary Pat Lee, the talk show host.
Yeah.
That Anthony. I mean, not Anthony.
When you're losing
Tony Shalhoub's character, Antonio.
Okay.
When Antonio's a huge Mary Pat Lee fan. He finds out that Roy is dating Mary Pat Lee. And he has this reaction.
What are you looking at, Scarpacci?
You? Her? How?
Well, we met at a foodaholics meeting a few weeks ago. Afterward, I took her out for a hot fudge sundae. We've been dating ever since.
She's Mary Pat Lee. And you're
Roy.
Oh, by the way, keep this to yourself. She is not ready to go public yet.
Who can blame her? She's Mary Pat Lee. You're...
I heard you the first time.
She's Uma Abedin.
Bradley Cooper.
Well, actually, wait.
You'd say to Uma.
Right. Yeah.
What? And Bradley doesn't want to come out yet.
He's Bradley Cooper. And you're Uma Abedin.
Yeah. Difficult to reconcile, but I, okay. Hey, you know.
There's a seat for
it. As long as those two kids are happy, you know, looking as ever since Rupert Murdoch and Jerry Hall broke up, I'm looking for a new it couple.
You're still banged up about that.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.